Tonight we want to do more contemplating than meditating. They will seem somewhat identical. And the reason is that in discussing things with several of the students during the past few days, I find that contemplation is not a normal procedure with many students. All of the truth we try to learn never really becomes living substance without contemplation. Now, usually people think of contemplation as thinking, sitting there and really thinking real hard, but it isn't. Contemplation on the spiritual scale is a quiet inner communion which precedes your meditation. It is out of this contemplation that the meditation then follows. Now, we're going to let our contemplation sort of ramble. And I'm suggesting this procedure for yourself so that you will see how when you put yourself into the hands of the Spirit and find a starting point, it will sort of take over for you without any previous outlining, and it will take you along the untrodden path of the soul in such a way that if you had tried to premeditate what you were going to do, you would not have done what Spirit had in mind. It's as if you were saying, "Well, Father, this is our time together, consciously, and I totally place myself in your hands. Thy Son heareth." Now, we may have some object in mind. We may, for example, say, "I wish to learn more about the nature of the eternal man, because I certainly know a lot about the time man that I'm trying not to be. And so I'm ready to be guided into that which is called the eternal man, or, in a larger sense, the now man." And so let's begin with a very difficult assignment. As you rest above time and establish that you are above time, not flowing with it, I'd like you to reverse something that you've already done. You began to do, "I am everywhere." And perhaps you establish some realization of it. That because you are the living Spirit, which is omnipresent, you are everywhere. And then possibly this became so embedded in your consciousness that you could feel this as a continuous fact that only needs an occasional reminder. Not something you have to learn again, but something you have to remind yourself of to just jolt you out of the hypnotism of the passing moment. Now you've done that, and I presume you'll do it often. But in this contemplation, I want you to find out why you can say with truth that not only am I everywhere, but everywhere is here. Everywhere is here. Now let's see if we can find some justification for that to authenticate it as a truth we can depend upon. Let's say that God is here, and that everywhere is in God. Therefore, everywhere is here. Now, I and the Father are one. We are not separated. And everything that is within the Father is within me. And therefore, everywhere is wherever I am. There's only one catch. You're not speaking about the human you. Everywhere is where I am. And because I am everywhere, everywhere is where I am. And that means something of a highly unusual nature. Where China appears to be, I am. And therefore, China is in me, I am not in China. And whatever China purports to be, it is actually the invisible I. But because I am the invisible self where China appears, and I am here, that which is within me must be here too. That means whatever appears to be out there, no matter where it appears, no matter what it is, it cannot be there because I am there. It cannot be here because I am here. But I can truthfully say that wherever it seems to be, I am, and I am here. And therefore, even though the image of China is there, it is here. The reality of everything in the universe is wherever you are. Now, that's a tall order. But it explains why you are expected to know the truth and stop the hurricane. Because it isn't there, it's where you are. And you know where it is? It's in your false consciousness of time. Right where you are, the hurricane on the Florida coast is. And when you know the truth of your reality, that hurricane that is in your false consciousness is dissolved by your true consciousness. Now we've got to practice that a little. We've got to understand the nature of the everywhereness that is here. And that means this entire universe, which is wherever God is, wherever I am, wherever the Son of God is, this entire universe is right here where I am. And that here-ness of you is an infinite here-ness. It's not the size of your hand or your arm. It's the infinite here-ness where everything is, and that here-ness is always wherever your consciousness of I am is. That means nothing is out of your reach, nothing is external to you. Everything is within you in its reality. And your realization of this is the dominion given by the Father to man over land, sea, and air. Now, we won't exhibit this consciousness except when it's required and only when it's spiritually ordained. But you will find that however this may appear to be beyond your scope, it will come within your range when you can establish two things: that the self of you is everywhere, and that everywhere is within yourself. You can do it, but you must practice doing it in contemplation. You're not going to do it as an emergency arises just because suddenly you remember. It's the way you live. And so I would suggest that some of these contemplations be put on your list to experiment with, to see that even if you live in Duluth, Minnesota, or Kansas City, or wherever, the universe is right in your room, because that's where you are in the consciousness of I. And because of that, you are automatically in touch with all that exists throughout your infinite consciousness, not by taking thought about it, but because it is a pre-established fact. There is nowhere in this known universe and in unknown universes that is not contained within the I of your infinite self. And that makes it all here. just as it makes it all here to God. Nothing exists outside God. Nothing exists outside I. And let's contemplate that a bit so that you can pin it down as one of the mystical facts that is illogical to the human mind and so startling when you find that it really works. I am not confined to this room or this body or this passing time. We're out of the child born in the womb. We're out of the flesh. We're resting above time, where immortality is. We're learning the nature of ourself beyond the passage of time to such a degree that we can go there in consciousness and rest above the passing images. And I am now accepting my omnipresent self, one with the Father, which we now call our everywhere self. My everywhere spiritual self is the only self. My eternal self is not confined in anything. It is eternally free. That is the only self we acknowledge. And it is here, and because it is indivisible, all that it is here. You may find this hard to understand until you realize that God is here, and not 1% of God, or 2 or 3. Wherever God is, all of God is, and that's the miracle of infinity. All of God is where God is. In our human self, we think of part of us as here. We can't all of us be here at the same time if we're spread out into different cities. But all of it being God, it's all here to God. 100% of infinite God is everywhere. And in the next yard away, in the next foot away, the next mile away, there still is 100% of God. And that's the miracle of sonship. 100% of you is everywhere. It's not spread out like butter on a piece of bread. You are 100% everywhere, and everywhere is here to you. No matter what may occur in the world, it is here. The entire Pacific Ocean is here. All the planets are here. The entire earth is here. And when you understand this, you are accepting the infinite nature of your spiritual self. The world may see a person, it cannot see your everywhere reality. You alone can accept it and then begin to accept it for everyone else. Because everywhere is here, nothing is outside of your being. Nothing is external to your everywhere spirit. If you are living in the belief that there is something external to you, you have accepted the finite human sense of self, which is not the creation of God, and you're back in the illusion of a mortal lifespan that dies. Now, where is your dominion then? It is simply in the knowledge that whatever appears cannot be there because you are there. And that whatever appears there, there, and there is only here in the false consciousness of your mortal sense of self. The tree that you see out there isn't there at all. It's in your mind. It's in your belief. Where do you hold the image of that tree? In your mind. Here is where the world is to you, even though it seems to be out there to the mind. Everything you know is right here in your consciousness. There isn't a thing that exists in this world that you know of that exists anywhere except where you know it. It is always here. And the knowledge that what is here in your consciousness is not of God is the way you take dominion over it. You won't be healing someone in another city. You'll be healing your concept of that someone where you are. Now, it may come to your attention that there is poverty in a certain area of the world, and if you wish to be of use in that area, you cannot be if you think that is where the poverty is, because it isn't where it is. It's in the world consciousness of poverty. And as you accept the world consciousness of poverty, the poverty is within you, not out there. And that's where you'll have to do your healing. Now, what limitation is there when you know that everywhere is here? Only your conscious knowledge of it. Apply this now to something else. Apply this to your business, which you think is out there. What tells you your business is out there? Your clients out there? Your sense mind tells you that. Your logical mind tells you that. But it is your conscious awareness of these things that contains your clients and your business. And that's where they exist, in your consciousness, or the lack of them. Whatever you think you don't have simply isn't in your consciousness. And that's where it must be planted. And so your dominion is, again, the business isn't out there at all, it's right here. And you bring the entire world into right here, no matter what it is. And you rest there. And you live in the here-ness of all that is until you translate that here-ness into its reality within your consciousness. Until you see that you don't really have clients. All there is spirit, and it's not appearing to you as clients for some reason. And maybe it's not appearing to you as clients because you haven't accepted the presence of spirit. And when you do, you may decide that suddenly you have more clients than you can handle, and you don't know why. But because you have decided that the here-ness which you entertained, which you thought was there-ness, was handled from a mental viewpoint without the substance of spirit, without the knowledge of spiritual reality, as the only presence, and your here-ness turned out to be something that was not very tasteful to you, but you had the opportunity all the time to convert that here-ness in your consciousness to a spiritual awareness, which in turn would manifest that which you had needed all the time. So remember, there is no external. When someone tells you there's a fire on a planet, remember, it's in the consciousness of those who have detected it, which they think is out there. The world has been fooled so long by the illusion of time that we have a great scientific thesis on how the world began and how it grew and how it developed and how certain things broke away from the sun, how atmosphere cooled, how things crystallized and solidified. It all sounds so convincing until you realize that time has never passed in God. There has not been 1 minute of passing time in God. The entire cooling of the universe and forming of planets is all based on the belief that there is an external world in time. And of course, it's not probable that everyone's going to leave here thinking that there is no external world in time, but there will be those who do. And there will be those who know that the external world in time and the scientific explanation of how it grew and developed is a complete denial of the words of the Father, who is all, and in whom there is no time, and there is no time for the world to grow, to develop, to disintegrate or decay. There is no time for it. It all exists that way in the world consciousness, but not in God. Now we'll pass from everywhere you are, and everywhere is here in your consciousness, into something you've got to learn to uphold, and that is that God is all. Now that eliminates the world. It eliminates all the dualities. It eliminates everything we've been used to. And it's a tall order. And yet it's been told to us for 2,000 years, so we should have been alerted long enough to have been working with it and to have reached some kind of inner agreement with it. We can say with divine authority that there is no world. And even though it's comfortable to think we're in it, the world can only exist in your consciousness. All of it. And now we want to see that because you can learn that the world is within your consciousness, this will be the pathway to your freedom from the world. It's a matter, then, of refining your consciousness by weeding out the lie until all that remains is the truth. The world is within your consciousness. And so if you were part of a national scare on anything that's happened in this world which has raised the hackles of humanity, you are accepting an external world. Fear of flying, things of that nature, are all belief in an external world and of a self that lives in the world instead of a consciousness that knows the world lives only in mortal consciousness. You've got to reverse that. And you've got to contemplate it. You've got to go within and rest there just silently and let the inner spirit reveal to you the nature of reality, that you may know the nature of the world. Just rest for that moment in the knowledge that the world, which you had formerly believed was external, only exists within your consciousness. And don't try to think it through. Just hold the idea there and rest quietly and let the spirit subtly, gently, lift you above the concept of an external world. If the world were external to God, we would have lost God, wouldn't we? If the world were external to infinity, there wouldn't be any infinity. And if the Son of God is infinite, how can the world be external to the Son of God?
When we say the world is within you, it is because we are accepting your identity as the infinite child of God. And the world within you is simply that world in the mind of man. But it is not within the consciousness of God. It is again implanted on your retina, an inner mental experience which you call the world out there. This is part of detaching yourself from the world, learning where it is. Buddha was one of the great lights on knowing the inner nature of the world. That's why he was such a tremendous healer. The entire world was in human consciousness. There was really nothing for him to heal, simply to know that the world within me is not of the Father. All that is within me is the kingdom, for I am the Son of the Father. And the kingdom within me is perfect. The world must be in a mortal consciousness, which I am learning not to have. Now, these are rather heady contemplations, but this is the kind of group where we should be capable of taking anything that comes along, regardless of how difficult may appear on the surface, and dwelling with it until we bring it down to bite size. Now here's something you're not going to like. Then again, you may get to like it. In this contemplation, we want to not only say to ourselves that there is no past, but we want to find a way to eliminate our past from our present. Now, when I say you may not like it, it's because there are so many beautiful things in your past. But just think if at the moment you have a pressing human problem, and if you are capable of eliminating yesterday's problem from this moment of selfhood, how beautiful that would be. Now, if the past is untrue, if it is a continuing successive series of false states of consciousness, and if you want to live in the now, how are you going to do it if you still bring the past into the now? So, your contemplation is, I will now dwell on the unreality of my human past. And if you haven't come far enough, that will be too rebellious an idea for you to entertain. If you have come far enough, you will see that somewhere along the line you're going to have to do it. Whether it's this moment or tomorrow, you're going to have to eliminate the sense of a human past. Or there's no way you can live in the now. So let's try it. Now this is something no one else can share with you because it's your past you're eliminating. It is to be eliminated in such a way that you stand on the threshold of the eternal now. God is not aware of your human past. Your human past is a denial that you always have been the Son of God. When you make your decision that I am now the Son, and not the mortal, you must realize you have always been the son and not the mortal. And therefore your decision must cover your past as well as your present. That throws out all of the so-called difficult times. They are all exposed as one continuing succession of unreality. We're starting with them because they're easy to throw out. The time you stumbled as a child, the time your parents worried about you, the time you wondered if you'd make it, the time you worried about others, the time you were filled with grief. Go back to all of these. They never happened in your divine self, in your immortal spiritual self, which is your only self. They happened in the false consciousness that lives in time. And they linger as memory. They are the memory of what never was in reality. Do you like to talk about them or dwell with them nostalgically? It's just another way of denying the inner Christ. You can't be born again if you're still living in that which never was. Now, this is difficult. We can't do it in 10 minutes. We can point the way. It's a contemplation that you will find very productive. You'll also find that it brings you to a beautiful state of forgiveness about all the people who allegedly wronged you in the past. You were wronged by a myth. And your resentment was a myth. It wasn't even you there to do the resenting. All of these human foibles that we find ourselves immersed in at one time or another are all part of the false sense of a life that never was, because the only life is the perfection of God. Can you take the whip to these memories? Do you think it's worth the trouble? Are you afraid to overturn tables and rout out the money changes of the past? I feel that if you put the time in to do this, you'll discover an inner cleanliness, a special kind of purity that lets the light in. Because the moment you empty out all of this unreality, you will find reality taking its place. The reality that always was there will begin to be activated when you rout out all the things you thought were there that never were. They are the glass darkly of what you had thought was your past. And they are blocking the light in your present more than you can possibly realize until you begin to eliminate them. A drowning man often sees all of his life in a second. He sees the entire past in 1 second. A prophet often sees the future in a second. Now, you needn't drown, you needn't be a prophet to see all of your life in a second. The past, the present, and the future have been seen by enlightened individuals in the twinkling of an eye. Not the human past, not the human present, and not the human future. But in a kaleidoscopic moment, when you have cleansed the temple, all time runs into now. And this nowness reveals the kingdom of God where you stand. I think, from what I have heard from some of the students, that the past, present, and future running into now is not too uncommon an experience. But when you start the acceptance of it without the experience of it, you're on the right track. It's another subject for contemplation. And really, it's another way of saying that what had been your past never was. The now that exists where your past seemed to be is the same now at this point. And you are accepting the infinity of now. And this is going to be probably one of the most important levels that you work to attain, because the infinity of now as your consciousness is the ultimate enlightenment. When all is now to you, you're in the kingdom of God, the kingdom of now, the kingdom above time. And so we'll have to contemplate that in such a way that we understand fully what is possible. The past is now. Time never passed so that it could become past. Now is a continuing now. It's a different dimension than we have known, but it's a now that continues and always is. It's like one vast ocean. No matter what part of it you're in it. And this now is the same way, only more so. It's like the infinity of God being everywhere, infinitely everywhere. 100% everywhere. It's 100% now, throughout now. And it never changes to be less than now. So that you are not growing, you are not developing, you are not rising to a higher potential. Now is already finished, established. And now is the nature of your being. You're not sliding back into something that isn't now. I am, but I am now. And I'm never going to be less than now. I'm not going to grow physically. I'm not going to diminish or decay physically. That isn't I am. That's a past image of myself that I entertained. I am the now, which is the eternal Father, the eternal now. Do you have the feeling of that now? You must contemplate it until it swallows you up. Until the very word is becomes so big that it swallows you. I am now. Too often we hear the word I am, and the same person is wearing some kind of a vest to protect himself against evil spirits, or some other nonsense which is just the opposite of I am, while pronouncing the words. Because living in the sense of time, we accept the things in time. But when I am now, I'm not accepting anything in time as real. The Christ consciousness is now the fullness of the I. You can never become it. There's no way for you as a person to become the fullness of the I. You can try for the next 5 million years. You cannot become what you are. You can only be what you are. And you can only be what you are by not being what you are not. I am now. Put it all together. I have no past. I always am. I am everywhere. Everywhere is here. I have dominion because there's nothing but I. There is no other I. Everywhere I am, and I am the only. There is no other I. My past is gone, and my future is gone, and the passing present is gone. There is only the eternal, continuous now, which I am. Now, you're not going to do this 24 hours a day. But a short time of doing it, before dawn or before the world starts spinning on its axis in front of you, will take care of the other 23 and a half hours. And I don't care what situations you face in the so-called external world, when you know the external world isn't there, and only I am, and I am now, you will begin to feel the illusion of the external world and its passing nature. And you will be detaching yourself from that which has baffled and seduced mankind into all forms of pain and misery. The contemplation should take at least 10 or 15 minutes. And because it gets the fire started, when you have finished the contemplation, you should then go into the total stillness and back it up with the silence which allows that contemplation to take root in the silence. Here are some experiences by other individuals about all time running together. This one is the poet, the mystic poet William Blake. You may remember him, and you may remember some of his unusual paintings. He said, "I see the past, the present, and the future existing all at once before me." Now, I don't think he meant that as just a momentary awareness, because if you look at his paintings, you'll see that there was something, some quality about them, some indefinable quality, which indicated that he had a permanent consciousness of the now. And you'll also notice that he had a strange way of painting people without feet, which is the way you're apt to see them within yourself. Now, this experience, as I say, was not a random one-time experience, but he had located the unreal nature of time. And it was this quality which gave him the insight to write the poetry that the world has admired without too well understanding it. Isaiah was saying the same thing when he reported the voice speaking to him. "I am God and there is none else." Now, this doesn't talk about passing of time, past, present, and future. But if I am God and there is none else, is there a past in God? That's a human concept. God is a continuing now. And once you come over the hurdle of seeing and understanding that continuing now as the reality of being, you're capturing what Isaiah heard from the voice. "I am God and there is none else. I am now and there is no other time. A million years is already now. You see, you have there that which we talked about by expanding your time span, so that now embraces all that appears to be past, present, and future. Now embraces all that is time and beyond. When you have the now consciousness, you have encompassed time, and there is time no more. And you're in reality where time stands still. It's all a matter of ascending in consciousness through a very simple thing called work. It isn't brilliance. It isn't any special quality you have. It's simply work. Something you learn you've got to do, like a geometric problem, and you start to do it and do it and do it and do it until it's done. I found out that to be the best way to become a mystic, is to work. I am Alpha and Omega, the first and the last. Same idea. This is what John heard on the Isle of Patmos. The Spirit said, I am not in passing time. I am the first and I am the last. I am all of it, meaning I am now. I am the continuing now. Another authoritative statement from John, who heard it on the Isle of Patmos. Always with the purpose that Spirit is revealing, the nature of your being is the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, the now, which never begins and never ends. To take you out of the illusion that there is time moving past you. Because only your false sense is in that illusion. And when you break the illusion, it's because you are attained the awareness of your reality. I am that which is, which was, and which is to come. One I is that which was, which is, and is to come. All three is the one I, telling you again, the sequence is false. And that brings up a very special trick of time. You are accustomed to seeing things in sequence. It takes a great deal of retraining to learn to accept simultaneity where sequence appears. For example, you see the seed. You see the seed show up, a sprout out of the ground. You see it develop and grow. You see it branch out. You see it blossom. All of this is a sequence. But you're not seeing God's tree. The entire divine tree is finished long before the seed is in the ground. And it is simultaneous. It doesn't go through the process of growth. It is one invisible tree. It's the same as the architect's blueprint, which is finished, and then one brick goes out and another, and the house takes form. After the blueprint is completed, you find the sequence in the visible of the form taking place. But simultaneity is the law of the Spirit. There's no cause here and then an effect 6 months apart. Everything is now. You don't have to wait 4 months to the harvest. The fields are already white. The cause and the effect are now. And when you rise to the William Blake type of understanding, you will see that birth and death are simultaneous. They are separated by time and made to appear to human eyes 50, 70, 80 years apart, but they are not. They are one simultaneous inner spiritual activity, and they are not what appears outwardly to you as birth or death. They are the eternal newness of spirit. And in time sequence, they appear as birth and death. Remove the time, they come together. And then they disappear into the eternal newness, which is ever borning and ever dying, and there's no taint to it or grief to it. The same is true with all of the opposites that we know. Love and hate, joy and sorrow, they only appear to be positive and negative because of time. You don't love someone and hate them at the same time, really. You love them once and then you hate them, and then maybe you come back to loving them. But it's in sequence. And you don't have joy while you have sorrow. You have them in sequence. First joy or one or the other first, and then the other. Time puts them in sequence and spreads them out over time. And when you learn that time isn't there, joy and sorrow come together. And just like birth and death come together to reveal only the newness of spirit ever being born and therefore ever dying while it's being born, in a different way than we know on the human sphere, so all dualities are brought into oneness. That's what happened in the ark. All the twos became one to show us that when time is removed, there are no opposites. Opposites depend on time, which presents them to us in a time sequence, and the time sequence is a fabrication of the senses. It's necessary for us to participate in some way in the activities of this world, but it's not the truth of being. There is no time sequence in God. Everything is simultaneous. And of course, if we had to do that without preparation, live in a simultaneous universe, without preparation, we'd be in the psychiatrist's lap in 5 seconds. We have to prepare for this. We have to learn first to withdraw time, to establish the consciousness of now, and then slowly spirit shows us the non-reality of sequence and shows us the simultaneity of true life. But knowing something about it, you can begin to look at the opposites and veto them with your consciousness. You can look at sorrow and know that it's the other side of the coin of joy, and begin to dwell in the inner contemplative state which fuses them into one and then reveals the true nature of joy and sorrow that we experience in this world in its own spiritual one reality. You find quite an amazing series of inner revelations when you take dualities, join them, remove time, accept them as simultaneous, and see how they cancel each other out in the strangest way. Sort of like yellow and blue makes green, that sort of thing. And you'll see something else emerge, something you never suspected, an experience worth having. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it, nothing can be put to it, or anything taken away from it. And so here's the preacher, Ecclesiastes, telling us that everything God creates is forever. And here we're looking at a world where nothing in it is forever. Sad to say, most of what we live with, in fact, all of what we live with, passes away. If you think hard, you can't find anything that doesn't pass away. And here King Solomon is telling us that everything created by the Father is forever. And we continue to live in that which passes away. Then he goes a step further. That which has been is now. This has been done so many times, but it's apropos to our understanding of time. That which hath been is now. And so the past, he's telling us, is not past. It's now. But what happened or seemed to have happened in the past can't be now. It's the reality of what was there in the past that is now, not what happened. What happened didn't happen, is what he's saying. What happened was illusion. The past is not the past. It was always something else, and that something else is reality, and reality is now. That's what is in these mystical words. And then he goes on to say, and that which is to be hath already been. And this is the same statement about the future that he just made about the past. The future is now, just as the past is now. Reality is the invisible substance of what appears as the past. Reality is the invisible substance of what appears as the future. And so what hath been is really now. And what will be is now. And then he says, and God requireth that which is past. But he's just told you that that which is past is now. So what God requireth is now. He's telling you to live in the now. Don't ask me why he doesn't say it, but this is what he does say.